1. Mount Munch. On the east edge of the Land of Oz, in the Munchkin Country, is a big, tall hill called Mount Munch. On one side, the bottom of this hill just touches the deadly sandy desert that separates the fairyland of Oz from all the rest of the world, but on the other side, the hill touches the beautiful, fertile country of the Munchkins. The Munchkin folks, however, merely stand off and look at Mount Munch and know very little about it, for, about a third of the way up, its sides become too steep to climb, and if any people live upon the top of that great towering peak that seems to reach nearly to the skies, the Munchkins are not aware of the fact. But people do live there, just the same. The top of Mount Munch is shaped like a saucer, broad and deep, and in the saucer are fields where grains and vegetables grow, and flocks are fed, and brooks flow and trees bear all sorts of things. There are houses scattered here and there, each having its family of high-ups, as the people call themselves. The high-ups seldom go down the mountain, for the same reason that the Munchkins never climb up, the sides are too steep. In one of the houses lived a wise old high-up named Beany Aru, who used to be a clever sorcerer. But Ozma of Oz, who rules everyone in the Land of Oz, had made a decree that no one should practice magic in her dominions except Glinda the Good and the Wizard of Oz, and when Glinda sent this royal command to the high-ups by means of a strong-winged eagle, old Beany Aru at once stopped performing magical arts. He destroyed many of his magic powders and tools of magic, and afterward honestly obeyed the law. He had never seen Ozma, but he knew she was his ruler and must be obeyed. There was only one thing that grieved him. He had discovered a new and secret method of transformations that was unknown to any other sorcerer. Glinda the Good did not know it, nor did the little Wizard of Oz, nor Dr. Pip nor old Mombi, nor anyone else who dealt in magic arts. It was Beany Aru's own secret. By its means, it was the simplest thing in the world to transform anyone into beast, bird or fish, or anything else, and back again, once you know how to pronounce the mystical word, Pyrtsksl. Beany Aru had used this secret many times, but not to cause evil or suffering to others. When he had wandered far from home and was hungry, he would say, "I want to become a cow, Pyrtsksl." In an instant he would be a cow, and then he would eat grass and satisfy his hunger. All beasts and birds can talk in the Land of Oz, so when the cow was no longer hungry, it would say, "I want to be Beany Aru again, Pyrtsksl." And the magic word, properly pronounced, would instantly restore him to his proper form. Now, of course, I would not dare to write down this magic word so plainly if I thought my readers would pronounce it properly and so be able to transform themselves and others, but it is a fact that no one in all the world except Beany Aru, had ever, up to the time this story begins, been able to pronounce Pyrtsksl the right way, so I think it is safe to give it to you. It might be well, however, in reading this story aloud, to be careful not to pronounce Pyrtsksl the proper way, and thus avoid all danger of the secret being able to work mischief. Beany Aru, having discovered the secret of instant transformation, which required no tools or powders or other chemicals or herbs and always worked perfectly, was reluctant to have such a wonderful discovery entirely unknown or lost to all human knowledge. He decided not to use it again, since Ozma had forbidden him to do so, but he reflected that Ozma was a girl and sometime might change her mind and allow her subjects to practice magic, in which case Beany Aru could again transform himself and others at will, unless, of course, he forgot how to pronounce Pyrtsksl in the meantime. After giving the matter careful thought, he decided to write the word, and how it should be pronounced, in some secret place, so that he could find it after many years, but where no one else could ever find it. That was a clever idea, but what bothered the old sorcerer was to find a secret place. He wandered all over the saucer at the top of Mount Munch, but found no place in which to write the secret word where others might not be likely to stumble upon it. So finally he decided it must be written somewhere in his own house. Beany Aru had a wife named Mopsy Aru who was famous for making fine huckleberry pies, and he had a son named Kiki Aru who was not famous at all. He was noted as being cross and disagreeable because he was not happy, and he was not happy because he wanted to go down the mountain and visit the big world below and his father would not let him. No one paid any attention to Kiki Aru, because he didn't amount to anything, anyway. Once a year there was a festival on Mount Munch which all the high-ups attended. It was held in the center of the saucer-shaped country, and the day was given over to feasting and merrymaking. The young folks danced and sang songs, the women spread the tables with good things to eat, and the men played on musical instruments and told fairy tales. Kiki Aru usually went to these festivals with his parents, and then sat sullenly outside the circle and would not dance or sing or even talk to the other young people. So the festival did not make him any happier than other days, and this time he told Beany Aru and Mopsy Aru that he would not go. He would rather stay at home and be unhappy all by himself, he said, and so they gladly let him stay. But after he was left alone, Kiki decided to enter his father's private room, where he was forbidden to go, and see if he could find any of the magic tools Binaru used to work with when he practiced sorcery. As he went in, Kiki stubbed his toe on one of the floorboards. He searched everywhere but found no trace of his father's magic. All had been destroyed. Much disappointed, he started to go out again when he stubbed his toe on the same floorboard. That set him thinking. Examining the board more closely, Kiki found it had been pried up and then nailed down again in such a manner that it was a little higher than the other boards. But why had his father taken up the board? Had he hidden some of his magic tools underneath the floor? Kiki got a chisel and pried up the board, but found nothing under it. He was just about to replace the board when it slipped from his hand and turned over, and he saw something written on the underside of it. The light was rather dim, so he took the board to the window and examined it, and found that the writing described exactly how to pronounce the magic word Pyrtsksl, which would transform anyone into anything instantly, and back again when the word was repeated. Now, at first, Kikiaru didn't realize what a wonderful secret he had discovered, but he thought it might be of use to him, and so he took a piece of paper and made on it an exact copy of the instructions for pronouncing Pyrtsksl. Then he folded the paper and put it in his pocket, and replaced the board in the floor so that no one would suspect it had been removed. After this, Kiki went into the garden and, sitting beneath a tree, made a careful study of the paper. He had always wanted to get away from Mount Munch and visit the big world, especially the Land of Oz, and the idea now came to him that if he could transform himself into a bird, he could fly to any place he wished to go and fly back again whenever he cared to. It was necessary, however, to learn by heart the way to pronounce the magic word, because a bird would have no way to carry a paper with it, and Kiki would be unable to resume his proper shape if he forgot the word or its pronunciation. So he studied it a long time, repeating it 100 times in his mind until he was sure he would not forget it. But to make safety doubly sure, he placed the paper in a tin box in a neglected part of the garden and covered the box with small stones. By this time it was getting late in the day, and Kiki wished to attempt his first transformation before his parents returned from the festival. So he stood on the front porch of his home and said, "I want to become a big, strong bird, like a hawk Pyrtsksl." He pronounced it the right way, so in a flash he felt that he was completely changed in form. He flapped his wings, hopped to the porch railing and said, "Kau, kau." Then he laughed and said half aloud, "I suppose that's the funny sound this sort of a bird makes. But now let me try my wings and see if I'm strong enough to fly across the desert." For he had decided to make his first trip to the country outside the Land of Oz. He had stolen this secret of transformation, and he knew he had disobeyed the law of Oz by working magic. Perhaps Glinda or the Wizard of Oz would discover him and punish him, so it would be good policy to keep away from Oz altogether. Slowly Kiki rose into the air, and resting on his broad wings, floated in graceful circles above the saucer-shaped mountaintop. From his height, he could see, far across the burning sands of the deadly desert, another country that might be pleasant to explore, so he headed that way, and with strong, steady strokes of his wings, began a long flight, too. The hawk. Even a hawk has to fly high in order to cross the deadly desert, from which poisonous fumes are constantly rising. Kikiaru felt sick and faint by the time he reached good land again, for he could not quite escape the effects of the poisons. But the fresh air soon restored him, and he alighted in a broad tableland which is called Highland. Just beyond it is a valley known as Lowland, and these two countries are ruled by the gingerbread man, John Doe, with Chick the Cherub as his prime minister. The hawk merely stopped here long enough to rest, and then he flew north and passed over a fine country called Maryland, which is ruled by a lovely wax doll. Then, following the curve of the desert, he turned north and settled on a treetop in the kingdom of Noland. Kiki was tired by this time, and the sun was now setting, so he decided to remain here till morning. From his treetop he could see a house nearby, which looked very comfortable. A man was milking a cow in the yard, and a pleasant-faced woman came to the door and called him to supper. That made Kiki wonder what sort of food hawks ate. He felt hungry, but didn't know what to eat or where to get it. Also, he thought a bed would be more comfortable than a treetop for sleeping, so he hopped to the ground and said, "I want to become Kikiaru again, Pyrtsksl." Instantly he had resumed his natural shape, and going to the house, he knocked upon the door and asked for some supper. "Who are you?" asked the man of the house. "A stranger from the Land of Oz," replied Kikiaru. "Then you are welcome," said the man. Kiki was given a good supper and a good bed, and he behaved very well, although he refused to answer all the questions the good people of Noland asked him. Having escaped from his home and found a way to see the world, the young man was no longer unhappy, and so he was no longer cross and disagreeable. The people thought him a very respectable person and gave him breakfast next morning, after which he started on his way feeling quite contented. Having walked for an hour or two through the pretty country that is ruled by King Bud, Kikiaru decided he could travel faster and see more as a bird, so he transformed himself into a white dove and visited the great city of Nol and saw the king's palace and gardens and many other places of interest. Then he flew westward into the kingdom of Nine, and after a day in Queen Zixi's country went on westward into the land of Ev. Every place he visited he thought was much more pleasant than the saucer country of the high ups, and he decided that when he reached the finest country of all he would settle there and enjoy his future life to the utmost. In the land of Ev he resumed his own shape again, for the cities and villages were close together and he could easily go on foot from one to another of them. Toward evening he came to a good inn and asked the innkeeper if he could have food and lodging. "You can if you have the money to pay," said the man, "otherwise you must go elsewhere." This surprised Kiki, for in the land of Oz they do not use money at all, everyone being allowed to take what he wishes without price. He had no money, therefore, and so he turned away to seek hospitality elsewhere. Looking through an open window into one of the rooms of the inn, as he passed along, he saw an old man counting on a table a big heap of gold pieces, which Kiki thought to be money. One of these would buy him supper in the bed, he reflected, so he transformed himself into a magpie and, flying through the open window, caught up one of the gold pieces in his beak and flew out again before the old man could interfere. Indeed, the old man who was robbed was quite helpless, for he dared not leave his pile of gold to chase the magpie, and before he could place the gold in a sack in his pocket the robber bird was out of sight and to seek it would be folly. Kikiaru flew to a group of trees and, dropping the gold piece to the ground, resumed his proper shape, and then picked up the money and put it in his pocket. "You'll be sorry for this," exclaimed a small voice just over his head. Kiki looked up and saw that a sparrow, perched upon a branch, was watching him. "Sorry for what?" he demanded. "Oh, I saw the whole thing," asserted the sparrow. "I saw you look in the window at the gold, and then make yourself into a magpie and rob the poor man, and then I saw you fly here and make the bird into your former shape. That's magic, and magic is wicked and unlawful, and you stole money, and that's a still greater crime. You'll be sorry, someday." "I don't care," replied Kikiaru, scowling.
"Aren't you afraid to be wicked?" asked the sparrow.
"No, I didn't know I was being wicked," said Kiki, "but if I was, I'm glad of it. I hate good people. I've always wanted to be wicked, but I didn't know how."
"Ha, ha, ha," laughed someone behind him, in a big voice, "that's the proper spirit, my lad. I'm glad I've met you, shake hands."
The sparrow gave a frightened squeak and flew away.
Three.
Two bad ones. Kiki turned around and saw a queer old man standing near. He didn't stand straight, for he was crooked. He had a fat body and thin legs and arms. He had a big, round face with bushy, white whiskers that came to a point below his waist, and white hair that came to a point on top of his head. He wore dull gray clothes that were tight-fitting, and his pockets were all bunched out as if stuffed full of something.
"I didn't know you were here," said Kiki.
"I didn't come until after you did," said the queer old man.
"Who are you?"
asked Kiki.
"My name's Ruggedo. I used to be the Gnome King, but I got kicked out of my country, and now I'm a wanderer."
"What made them kick you out?" inquired the high-up boy.
"Well, it's the fashion to kick kings nowadays. I was a pretty good king to myself, but those dreadful Oz people wouldn't let me alone. So I had to abdicate."
"What does that mean?"
"It means to be kicked out. But let's talk about something pleasant. Who are you and where did you come from?"
"I'm called Kikiaru. I used to live on Mount Munch in the land of Oz, but now I'm a wanderer like yourself." The Gnome King gave him a shrewd look. "I heard that bird say that you transformed yourself into a magpie and back again. Is that true?"
Kiki hesitated, but saw no reason to deny it. He felt that it would make him appear more important.
"Well, yes," he said.
"Then you're a wizard?"
"No, I only understand transformations," he admitted.
"Well, that's pretty good magic, anyhow," declared old Ruggedo. "I used to have some very fine magic, myself, but my enemies took it all away from me. Where are you going now?"
"I'm going into the inn, to get some supper and a bed," said Kiki.
"Have you the money to pay for it?" asked the gnome.
"I have one gold piece."
"Which you stole."
"Very good. And you're glad that you're wicked. Better yet. I like you,
young man, and I'll go to the inn with you if you'll promise not to eat eggs for supper.
Don't you like eggs? Asked Kiki.
I'm afraid of them, they're dangerous. Said Ruggedo, with a shudder.
All right, agreed Kiki, I won't ask for eggs.
Then come along, said the gnome. When they entered the inn, the landlord scowled at Kiki and said,
I told you I would not feed you unless you had money.
Kiki showed him the gold piece.
And how about you? Asked the landlord, turning to Ruggedo. Have you money?
I've something better, answered the old gnome, and taking a bag from one of his pockets he poured from it upon the table a mass of glittering gems, diamonds, rubies and emeralds. The landlord was very polite to the strangers after that. He served them an excellent supper, and while they ate it, the high-up boy asked his companion.
Where did you get so many jewels?
Well, I'll tell you, answered the gnome. When those Oz people took my kingdom away from me just because it was my kingdom and I wanted to run it to suit myself, they said I could take as many precious stones as I could carry. So I had a lot of pockets made in my clothes and loaded them all up. Jewels are fine things to have with you when you travel, you can trade them for anything.
Are they better than gold pieces? Asked Kiki.
The smallest of these jewels is worth 100 gold pieces, such as you stole from the old man.
Don't talk so loud, begged Kiki, uneasily. Someone else might hear what you are saying.
After supper they took a walk together, and the former gnome king said,
Do you know the Shaggy Man, and the Scarecrow, and the Tin Woodman, and Dorothy, and Ozma and all the other Oz people?
No, replied the boy, I have never been away from Mount Munch until I flew over the deadly desert the other day in the shape of a hawk.
Then you've never seen the Emerald City of Oz?
Never.
Well, said the gnome, I knew all the Oz people, and you can guess I do not love them. All during my wanderings I have brooded on how I can be revenged on them. Now that I've met you I can see a way to conquer the land of Oz and be king there myself, which is better than being king of the gnomes.
How can you do that? Inquired Kiki Aru, wonderingly.
Never mind how. In the first place, I'll make a bargain with you. Tell me the secret of how to perform transformations and I will give you a pocketful of jewels, the biggest and finest that I possess.
No, said Kiki, who realized that to share his power with another would be dangerous to himself.
I'll give you 2 pockets full of jewels, said the gnome.
No, answered Kiki.
I'll give you every jewel I possess.
No, 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 said Kiki, who was beginning to be frightened.
Then, said the gnome, with a wicked look at the boy, I'll tell the innkeeper that you stole that gold piece and he will have you put in prison.
Kiki laughed at the threat.
Before he can do that, said he, I will transform myself into a lion and tear him to pieces, or into a bear and eat him up, or into a fly and fly away where he could not find me.
Can you really do such wonderful transformations? Asked the old gnome, looking at him curiously.
Of course, declared Kiki. I can transform you into a stick of wood, in a flash, or into a stone, and leave you here by the roadside.
The wicked gnome shivered a little when he heard that, but it made him long more than ever to possess the great secret. After a while he said,
I'll tell you what I'll do. If you will help me to conquer Oz and to transform the Oz people, who are my enemies, into sticks or stones, by telling me your secret, I'll agree to make you the ruler of Oz, and I will be your prime minister and see that your orders are obeyed.
I'll help do that, said Kiki, but I won't tell you my secret.
The gnome was so furious at this refusal that he jumped up and down with rage and sputtered and choked for a long time before he could control his passion. But the boy was not at all frightened. He laughed at the wicked old gnome, which made him more furious than ever.
Let's give up the idea, he proposed, when Ruggedo had quieted somewhat. I don't know the Oz people you mention and so they are not my enemies. If they've kicked you out of your kingdom, that's your affair, not mine.
Wouldn't you like to be king of that splendid fairyland? Asked Ruggedo.
Yes, I would, replied Kiki Aru, but you want to be king yourself, and we would quarrel over it.
No, said the gnome, trying to deceive him. I don't care to be king of Oz, come to think it over. I don't even care to live in that country. What I want first is revenge. If we can conquer Oz, I'll get enough magic then to conquer my own kingdom of the gnomes, and I'll go back and live in my underground caverns, which are more homelike than the top of the earth. So here's my proposition, help me conquer Oz and get revenge, and help me get the magic away from Glinda and the wizard, and I'll let you be king of Oz forever afterward.
I'll think it over, answered Kiki, and that is all he would say that evening. In the night when all in the inn were asleep but himself, old Ruggedo the gnome rose softly from his couch and went into the room of Kiki Aru the high up,
and searched everywhere for the magic tool that performed his transformations. Of course, there was no such Thule, and although Ruggedo searched in all the boy's pockets, he found nothing magical whatever. So he went back to his bed and began to doubt that Kiki could perform transformations. Next morning he said, "Which way do you travel today?"
"I think I shall visit the Rose Kingdom," answered the boy.
"That is a long journey," declared the gnome. "I shall transform myself into a bird," said Kiki, "and so fly to the Rose Kingdom in an hour.
Then transform me, also, into a bird, and I will go with you," suggested Ruggedo.
"But, in that case, let us fly together to the Land of Oz, and see what it looks like." Kiki thought this over. Pleasant as were the countries he had visited, he heard everywhere that the Land of Oz was more beautiful and delightful. The Land of Oz was his own country, too, and if there was any possibility of his becoming its king, he must know something about it. While Kiki the High Up thought, Ruggedo the Gnome was also thinking. This boy possessed a marvelous power, and although very simple in some ways, he was determined not to part with his secret. However, if Ruggedo could get him to transport the wily old gnome to Oz, which he could reach in no other way, he might then induce the boy to follow his advice and enter into the plot for revenge, which he had already planned in his wicked heart.
"There are wizards and magicians in Oz," remarked Kiki, after a time. "They might discover us, in spite of our transformations."
"Not if we are careful," Ruggedo assured him. "Ozma has a magic picture, in which she can see whatever she wishes to see, but Ozma will know nothing of our going to Oz, and so she will not command her magic picture to show where we are or what we are doing. Glinda the Good has a great book called the Book of Records, in which is magically written everything that people do in the Land of Oz, just the instant they do it."
"Then," said Kiki, "there is no use our attempting to conquer the country, for Glinda would read in her book all that we do, and as her magic is greater than mine, she would soon put a stop to our plans."
"I said people, didn't I?" retorted the gnome. "The book doesn't make a record of what birds do, or beasts. It only tells the doings of people. So, if we fly into the country as birds, Glinda won't know anything about it."
"Two birds couldn't conquer the Land of Oz," asserted the boy, scornfully.
"No, that's true," admitted Ruggedo, and then he rubbed his forehead and stroked his long pointed beard and thought some more.
"Ah, now I have the idea," he declared. "I suppose you can transform us into beasts as well as birds?"
"Of course."
"And can you make a bird a beast, and a beast a bird again, without taking a human form in between?"
"Certainly," said Kiki. "I can transform myself or others into anything that can talk. There's a magic word that must be spoken in connection with the transformations, and as beasts and birds and dragons and fishes can talk in Oz, we may become any of these we desire to. However, if I transformed myself into a tree, I would always remain a tree, because then I could not utter the magic word to change the transformation."
I see," said Ruggedo, nodding his bushy, white head until the point of his hair waved back and forth like a pendulum.
"That fits in with my idea, exactly. Now, listen, and I'll explain to you my plan. We'll fly to Oz as birds and settle in one of the thick forests in the Gillikin country. There you will transform us into powerful beasts, and as Glinda doesn't keep any track of the doings of beasts, we can act without being discovered."
"But how can two beasts raise an army to conquer the powerful people of Oz?" inquired Kiki.
"That's easy. But not an army of people, mind you. That would be quickly discovered. And while we are in Oz, you and I will never resume our human forms until we've conquered the country and destroyed Glinda, and Ozma, and the Wizard, and Dorothy, and all the rest, and so have nothing more to fear from them."
"It is impossible to kill anyone in the Land of Oz," declared Kiki.
"It isn't necessary to kill the Oz people," rejoined Ruggedo.
"I'm afraid I don't understand you," objected the boy. "What will happen to the Oz people, and what sort of an army could we get together, except of people?"
"I'll tell you. The forests of Oz are full of beasts. Some of them, in the faraway places, are savage and cruel, and would gladly follow a leader as savage as themselves. They have never troubled the Oz people much, because they had no leader to urge them on, but we will tell them to help us conquer Oz, and as a reward we will transform all the beasts into men and women, and let them live in the houses and enjoy all the good things, and we will transform all the people of Oz into beasts of various sorts, and send them to live in the forests and the jungles. That is a splendid idea, you must admit, and it's so easy that we won't have any trouble at all to carry it through to success."
"Will the beasts consent, do you think?" asked the boy.
"To be sure they will. We can get every beast in Oz on our side except a few who live in Ozma's palace, and they won't count,
for
Conspirators. Kikiaru didn't know much about Oz and didn't know much about the beasts who lived there, but the old gnome's plan seemed to him to be quite reasonable. He had a faint suspicion that Ruggedo meant to get the best of him in some way, and he resolved to keep a close watch on his fellow conspirator. As long as he kept to himself the secret word of the transformations, Ruggedo would not dare to harm him, and he promised himself that as soon as they had conquered Oz, he would transform the old gnome into a marble statue and keep him in that form forever. Ruggedo, on his part, decided that he could, by careful watching and listening, surprise the boy's secret, and when he had learned the magic word he would transform Kikiaru into a bundle of faggots and burn him up and so be rid of him. This is always the way with wicked people. They cannot be trusted even by one another. Ruggedo thought he was fooling Kiki, and Kiki thought he was fooling Ruggedo, so both were pleased. "It's a long way across the desert," remarked the boy, "and the sands are hot and send up poisonous vapors. Let us wait until evening and then fly across in the night when it will be cooler." The former gnome king agreed to this, and the two spent the rest of that day in talking over their plans. When evening came they paid the innkeeper and walked out to a little grove of trees that stood nearby. "Remain here for a few minutes and I'll soon be back," said Kiki, and walking swiftly away, he left the gnome standing in the grove. Ruggedo wondered where he had gone, but stood quietly in his place until, all of a sudden, his form changed to that of a great eagle, and he uttered a piercing cry of astonishment and flapped his wings in a sort of panic. At once his eagle cry was answered from beyond the grove, and another eagle, even larger and more powerful than the transformed Ruggedo, came sailing through the trees and alighted beside him. "Now we are ready for the start," said the voice of Kiki, coming from the eagle. Ruggedo realized that this time he had been outwitted. He had thought Kiki would utter the magic word in his presence, and so he would learn what it was, but the boy had been too shrewd for that. As the two eagles mounted high into the air and began their flight across the great desert that separates the land of Oz from all the rest of the world, the gnome said, "When I was king of the gnomes I had a magic way of working transformations that I thought was good, but it could not compare with your secret word. I had to have certain tools and make passes and say a lot of mystic words before I could transform anybody." "What became of your magic tools?" inquired Kiki. "The Oz people took them all away from me, that horrid girl, Dorothy, and that terrible fairy, Ozma, the ruler of Oz at the time. They took away my underground kingdom and kicked me upstairs into the cold, heartless world."
"Why did you let them do that?" asked the boy.
"Well," said Ruggedo, "I couldn't help it. They rolled eggs at me, eggs, dreadful eggs. And if an egg even touches a gnome, he is ruined for life."
"Is any kind of an egg dangerous to a gnome?"
"Any kind and every kind. An egg is the only thing I'm afraid of." 5. A happy corner of Oz. There is no other country so beautiful as the land of Oz. There are no other people so happy and contented and prosperous as the Oz people. They have all they desire, they love and admire their beautiful girl ruler, Ozma of Oz, and they mix work and play so justly that both are delightful and satisfying and no one has any reason to complain. Once in a while something happens in Oz to disturb the people's happiness for a brief time, for so rich and attractive a fairyland is sure to make a few selfish and greedy outsiders envious, and therefore certain evildoers have treacherously plotted to conquer Oz and enslave its people and destroy its girl ruler, and so gain the wealth of Oz for themselves. But up to the time when the cruel and crafty gnome, Ruggedo, conspired with Kikiaru, the high up, all such attempts had failed. The Oz people suspected no danger. Life in the world's nicest fairyland was one round of joyous, happy days. In the center of the Emerald City of Oz, the capital city of Ozma's dominions, is a vast and beautiful garden, surrounded by a wall inlaid with shining emeralds, and in the center of this garden stands Ozma's royal palace, the most splendid building ever constructed. From 100 towers and domes floated the banners